From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. I'm glad I'm back in New York at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. It was good being in D.C. Maybe not the best idea to be in a tent outside in January, but we'll see. Brett Baer is with us. Gary Sinise this hour, the Emmy Award-winning actor, has got a great message. And, of course, there's very few people in this country more pro-military than him. And he's firmly in Pete Hegseth's corner. 1-866-408-7669. We know this day there's going to be a lot going on ever now that we're in Trump era, too. We also know it's the first ever blizzard warnings issued throughout the Gulf Coast, and thousands of flights have been canceled. And hopefully, maybe we can make it a little better by listening to the radio. Before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This can be easy or this can be hard. This is about America's national security interests, and we're stalling. So that's not going to happen. You can force us to staying around here, and we can vote on these things Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Get it
done.
But
we're going to vote on them.
Trump gets Rubio through the nomination gauntlet. We're going to look at the testimony of right now of all of his nominees and why just one is confirmed at this hour, as Senator Thune has seen enough and said, if you slow it down, we're going to stick around all weekend long.
Number two.
ICE teams are out there as of today. We gave them the direction to prioritize public safety threats that we're looking for. So we've been working up the target list.
Tom Homan. ICE teams are out there already focusing on safety threats. Of all the entire border area, only 700 crossings yesterday. Massive immigration action is already underway. And yes, there is pushback.
Number one.
This means we can create AI and AGI in the United States of America. Wouldn't have been obvious that this was possible. But I think if a different president, might not have been possible. But we are thrilled to get to do this. And I think it'll be great for Americans, great for the whole world.
Sam Altman, big, big, big press conference yesterday about 4 o'clock. Trump time in real time. Massive executive actions blitzing D.C. and a major announcement on AI power. And it's not driven by taxpayer dollars. What is it? A $500 billion effort to build new data centers after Trump revoked Biden's executive action order on addressing the AI risk, which hamstrung the industry and, I believe, allowed China to catch up. Microsoft, Google, Amazon, and Meta have spent billions of dollars on new facilities, but now AI leaders such as Altman, you just heard from, say more of the facilities must be built for AI technology to keep on advancing, and that's what's happening. They also have investments from firm MGX, an investor in OpenAI from Dubai, and funding to the project also comes from Microsoft and NVIDIA. So we'll see how this goes. I'm excited about it because you have private industry getting the green light from the White House to go ahead and put together this project. Joining us now is Brett Baer, chief political anchor of Fox News, you know, getting set to host Special Report at 6 p.m. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
So you watched this presser, and then you thought, let me just get these guys for myself, and you got these tech titans outside in the sub-zero weather.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly the perfect environment, but it is what we had, and I thought it was interesting just to have them digest what they went through with President Trump, but also kind of give a little bit more context on this project. I mean, you think about this. This is $500 billion that is building infrastructure inside the U.S. That they say will change the dynamic. And there is this race with China. You know, whoever is better at AI is going to be better positioned for the future. And these guys kind of laid that out.
So you had the interview. So you pulled them out and you got a chance to talk to them a little bit more. Here's what you asked. Here's you with Larry Ellison, founder of Oracle, chairman and CTO. He says they've been working on this deal for a while, but now they got the president to put together. Cut five.
We have been working on it for a long time. The first data centers are actually under construction in Texas already, and we'll be turning them over to Sam to start training their next model. The data center we already built, it was the largest computer ever built. The data center we're building will surpass it and be the largest computer ever built, which enables this AI. Which will allow personalized medicine.
And that was his big emphasis about personalized medicine, be able to detect cancer ahead of time, design something to take that cancer out. Brett, you get the sense that these three guys were as much success as they've had. They all probably got great yachts and have experiences we can only imagine. They would just seem thrilled to be in the White House yesterday. Did you get that sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're excited. I think they're, you know, each one of them, not surprisingly, said that this is only possible with this administration, you know, and I think it's just interesting. On day one, here they are, you know, and I also asked about President Biden and, you know, there's others like Bernie Sanders saying and warning about an oligarchy and powerful money men having too much input in U.S. policy. And they said, you have to have the money to do the big things. And Massa, the head of the bank, SoftBank, said, it's imperative that we do this for the future of the nation, and it creates jobs. And, you know, obviously there's some questions, Brian, about making sure AI has the rails to make sure it's safe. But these guys say it's the future.
Right. Biden people really felt as though the Biden people were suffocating them and put up the guardrails to the point where they were actually picking winners and losers. And, you know, I've heard the first time I heard Altman, he was talking about warning everyone about what he has in his hands. And that is, and he's really nervous about it. But now they got to realize they don't have any time to do any reflecting. They have to race forward because it looks like China has caught up to us big time. So you have Sam Altman now with two others putting this together. So we'll see if they have the funding. I was surprised because Elon Musk is in a death match with Sam Altman right now. He's not part of this. He was one of the first in AI in Silicon Valley to invest. Are you surprised he wasn't a part of this at all?
Maybe, yeah. I guess I hadn't thought about it too much. I think obviously he has his hands full with Doge and dealing with that, and obviously his own company, SpaceX, and what he's doing. I think Elon Musk came up yesterday as they were talking about TikTok and, you know, possible buyers, and I think that is really going to be – and by the way, Ellison was also mentioned by President Trump as this guy could buy it. And so I think as we talked about on Inauguration Day, that's going to be a big sticking issue going forward.
Right. But does it also show that Elon Musk is not running the White House like some are labeling it? Yesterday, the electric car supplement, the mandate is done, you know, not where you get money incentive to buy an electric car. He runs Tesla. He's probably not happy about that. He wanted didn't want Scott Bessent as Treasury Secretary. He wanted Lutnick. So he lost that. And then you have three of his rivals there talking about a $500 billion deal. So he's not on that. So you can't say that he's running the place. I just think President Trump has respect for him.
100%. Yeah. And he's very grateful for him for what he did in the election and thinks he's really, really smart. But he doesn't have an office in the West Wing. And I do think he's going to have a lot of influence, but not as portrayed like Vice President Elon Musk.
So, Brett, I want to bring up this. This is John Thune yesterday, Senate floor. He knows the Democrats are slowing down the nominations. Only Rubio's free. You have others who have gotten through committee. The hearings are slow. This is what he said. Cut 22.
14-3 coming out of the committee. We've now wasted a whole day where we could have been acting on that nomination. And so really, I think the question before the House is, do we want to vote on these folks on Tuesday or vote on them on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? Because that's what we're going to do. This can be easy or this can be hard. This is a nominee that came out of the Intelligence Committee 14-3. It is a bipartisan nomination to the Central Intelligence Agency. This is about America's national security interests, and we're stalling. So that's not going to happen. We're going to file cloture on them. You can force us to staying around here, and we can vote on these things Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we're going to vote on them.
I love it. And he's got to stay. He's got to follow through on that. It screws up everybody's plans. They got personal lives. Most of these guys have families. Sticking around on the weekend is usually problematic. A lot of times they have fundraisers. So he's saying, why can't we get a vote on Kristi Noem? Why can't we get a vote on some of the people you heard before? Pete Hegseth's been out of committee for a few days. He got through. He's waiting for a general vote. On January 29th, Kash Patel's confirmation hearing data set. He's going to get a lot of fire, but I think he's ready for it. The Judiciary Ranking Member Dick Durbin just announced Kash Patel's confirmation hearing for that date, but also said that he is not ready and should not be FBI director. Your thoughts about the uphill battle Kash Patel will have, Brett?
Well, I think, let me go backwards first. The delay tactics on Democrats, it's a big, big deal. You know, like they have by statute that they could call for each nominee to have 30 hours of debate. Now, what Thune is talking about there is once you get out of committee, if it's 14-3 for John Ratcliffe at CIA, usually they say, forget the debate, 1 hour and let's vote. And they're not doing that. They're holding up everything. Democrats say that they're mad that they don't have the full FBI report. They're being essentially told what's in the FBI in all of these nominees, the FBI reports, by the transition campaign. And they're upset about that. That's why they say they're holding things up. But this is going to come to a head really quickly, not only Thune's scheduling and keeping everybody around for the weekend, but you could start seeing recess appointments. If the House adjourns, this is a little in the weeds, Brian, but they could adjourn at the end of this week. The Senate would not agree to adjourn, but there is a statute that says that the president then, because the House and Senate are not in sync, can step in and say the Senate has to adjourn, and he could get his appointments in recess. Now, it's never been tried before. It would be challenged legally. But he could say, I'm putting these people in to run the government. You can continue with your hearings and your votes, but I'm going to do it. And if he does that, you know, there'll be a constitutional, you know, challenge, and it'll be legally challenged, but all of them could be in their job for up to 2 years.
It's amazing how many machinations, but if you know he's going to pass, I heard Tulsi Gabbard's meetings aren't going that well. Have you heard that same thing?
Yeah, I think there's a few bumps in the road. I think they're waiting to dump what they have on Tulsi Gabbard as far as, you know, her meetings in Syria and whether she met with members of Hezbollah and all of this stuff. I think is Democrats are going to unload it at a hearing as opposed to beforehand.
Right. Big picture, your thoughts, having I talked to you before the inauguration, the parade, the ceremony, and after. What are your thoughts going in? What are your thoughts now about what these first day on the job has been like, first 2 days?
Well, I mean, it's like night and day. You know, I mean, we talked about it. He's answered more questions in a day and a half than Joe Biden did in a year. And, you know, the press can't be upset. He's just answering questions nonstop, you know, the signing of the executive orders in the Oval Office, and he finds the letter in the Resolute desk, and it was Peter asked him, and then, you know, there's 50 minutes of questions after the meeting with the tech CEOs. I mean, he is creating news nonstop, so it's like night and day. And then secondly, these executive orders are going to keep on coming, and the issue about staffing is that you have to have people that implement this stuff, which is why this confirmation stuff is going to come to a head.
Absolutely. Marco Rubio did his first interview with Good Morning America. I don't know why. And as usual, they bring up January 6th. Finally, Brett, are you shocked? The January 6th pardons, commutations, I'm not sure what it is. I wouldn't have done it with anyone who used violence against cops, but maybe they are overcharged. Worth looking at. But when you see the blowback and how everybody's leading with it now in other channels, and how Marco Rubio got 10 minutes of it from George Stephanopoulos when he is the new Secretary of State, not the Secretary of January 6th.
Yeah, it's obviously the focus. You know, it's the shiny thing. I understand the criticism. You know, if you have Vance and others saying that any violent offenders should not be pardoned or get their sentences dropped. And then I understand what the president said, that he believed they served 3 years and that some of the charges in his mind were oversold. And so it's going to be controversial, but there are so many things going on that, you know, he's answered that question. The president has now 5 or 6 times in these news conferences. You know, I think they're going to come down with pardons and commutations on those pro-lifers.
who were arrested outside singing outside abortion clinics. I think that's coming next, maybe even today.
All right, Brett, thanks so much. Great interview last night out in the White House. It's going to be a much different story over the next 4 years. Brett, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Gary Sinise at the bottom of the hour. Your call's next, 1-866-408-7669. First stop, Scott in the Villages.
Thank you, Brian. So I don't believe that the Biden family is shielded from prosecution because you're not allowed to use the White House to conduct criminal activity. And the Supreme Court spoke about there is presidential immunity. Well, he wasn't acting as the president when he issued the pardons. He's acting as the big guy.
He's acting Joe Biden's pardons. I'm not for. I think preemptive pardons are one of the worst things he's done, and he's done a lot of terrible things. And I wasn't for just letting everybody out of prison. There are certain guys that shouldn't be out of prison, and there's other people that just were walking and been overcharged. I think you needed to go through them individually, not do a broad-based one. But I don't think it's the number one story in the country. I think it's lucky to make the top 10. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Biden Files.
A person's final story can be told through their bodies in an autopsy.
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Biden covers three incredible cases where he helped change the course of the investigation.
Sometimes it takes more than one look to put the pieces together.
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put their trust in you. And as you told the nation yesterday, you have felt the providential hand of a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families, some who fear for their lives.
Marianne Edgar Budd is an activist, and she was chosen, I guess she chose herself, at the National Cathedral in a traditional mass for the new president, whoever it is. He goes and he gets this in front of all of his family as if he is a threat to gay people. Someone should tell that to his Treasury Secretary or his envoy to the Middle East, or to not to the Middle East, but to Europe. That is Rick Grenell. Are you kidding with that stupid comment? Do you expect that at a ceremony or a mass from a future president or from the current president of the United States? Absolutely not. President went out to Truth Social right after. I went after her for that, and he's demanding an apology, and basically he let her have it. So when we come back, I'm going to bring that up with Gary Sinise. Gary Sinise, the Emmy Award-winning actor, director, advocate, and author of a best-selling book, Grateful American, talks about his life in it, and he's been a remarkable actor, but he did have tragedy hit his family with the passing of his son, Mac. They found some music he wrote before he passed away. It is now out and about and available. We're going to have that story and more when we come back. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show. And that is The Rise. It's done by Max Sinise, who sadly passed away as the son of Gary Sinise. Before he did, Gary was able to, after he passed away, actually, to look through some of his stuff and found some of these unpublished songs, and he's put them into a brand new album, now available at GarySiniseFoundation.org to get the special edition of the double vinyl album. You could go right there and buy it, and it goes to Gary's foundation, which goes to fighting the disease that took Mac's life. Gary, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me, Brian. Thank you, and thanks for playing the rise there.
Yeah, it's the rise. Now, tell everybody how you what happened to Mac.
Well, unfortunately, in 2018, we found out he had a very rare tumor called chordoma, and it starts in the spine, either at the top of the spine or the base of the spine, and his was a sacral chordoma, and that began a very long cancer fight for him. He was an excellent musician, drummer, and everything, but the cancer disabled him. He could no longer play as time went on. And so music, which, you know, he went to USC Music School, and he was just a great composer and player, and he just put that in the background for a long time. And then early in 2023, he said to me he had a piece of music that he wrote in college that he never finished, and he thought he might want to try to finish it. So he went to work on it, teamed up with a buddy of his from college as well, a fellow composer named Oliver Schnee. And they did this piece that's at Max and East YouTube called Arctic Circles. And that began what turned into an album for him. And then sadly, and that album was finished at the end of 2023. And we released it at the Gary Sinise Foundation website. Sadly, he passed away January 5th of 2024. And then after he died, I just started looking through his files, and I found all kinds of other additional music that he'd written and tucked away, including that piece that you were just playing there, The Rise. And I was kind of blown away because I had heard a few of the pieces, but like The Rise there that you were playing, I had not heard that. He wrote that actually for my foundation, and it got tucked away and was never used. And I didn't know he had written it. He was working on it for our video team, who wanted some music to use in the videos. And then I found all this other music, Brian, and I just thought, I can't just leave it here in his files on his laptop. And so I went to work and produced Resurrection and Revival Part 2.
Well, because you're a musician as well, obviously, so you have that in the family. And what was that like for you? Is that therapeutic, too, to be able to work with your son one more time?
Well, you know, I found a lot of music that I wished he had shared with me. Some of it he wrote quite a while ago and just tucked it away and never kind of revisited. And then I just started listening to all this music and found it. And, of course, I just thought, you know, I'm going to go to work on it and make another record. And I sure wish that Mac was able to be here with me to do it. But I know he was on my shoulder the whole time. And now we have a double album, Resurrection and Revival Part 2. And as you said, it's the proceeds for both the first record and Part 2 are going to the Gary Sinise Foundation. That's what Mac wanted. He wanted to create an album. And if any sales were made, he wanted the proceeds to go to the Gary Sinise Foundation. He worked for the foundation until he got too sick to continue on. So we're raising money through the Gary Sinise Foundation and selling these vinyl records.
Well, that's great. And we know all your work goes towards the military. And we know you picked up from Los Angeles and you left California and you gone to Tennessee, to Nashville with your company. What are your thoughts as you've seen Los Angeles essentially burn to the ground and no water in the hydrants?
Well, it's pretty damn sad. Look, we lived there for 35 years, and part of what you deal with in California, and there's a fire season every year, and the winds come and the fires come, and there hasn't been a year that I've lived there that there hasn't been fires in California, in Southern California. So it's something that you live with out there, but the fact that things were just not prepared for this particular fire is pretty disgraceful, I think. Very, very sad. I feel very bad for all the people that lost their homes. I have friends who lost their homes and, you know, feel very sad for them. They lost everything. One of the gals that sings on Mac's record, Resurrection and Revival Part 2, was a college buddy of his. She had just moved back from New York City to Altadena. And within, you know, weeks of moving back, her house was destroyed. So it's pretty sad. I do hope that they clean things up there and, you know, fix things. But there's a lot of broken stuff in California. It's very sad. It's the most magnificently beautiful state, and they need to just fix a lot of things out there. This shouldn't have happened to this extent. I heard, I don't know if I can confirm this, but I did hear one story that it was 45 minutes from the initial fire, 45 minutes before any, you know, any help showed up to start to put right. the fire out. And with those winds, 80-mile-an-hour, 100-mile-an-hour winds going like that, there's no way to stop that fire unless you really get it right away. And unfortunately, okay. they didn't.
So this is the emblematic, I think, of terrible leadership at the mayor, horrible governor who's all show, no action, and they spend their money trying to get gas cars off the road and Donald Trump out of the state. They spent $50 million to Trump-proof upcoming legislation. They didn't even know what was coming. Trump has been very critical. He said, I told you to get your water from the north to get to the south. You don't listen to me. In fact, you had an executive order to undo it. James Woods joined me last weekend on One Nation. And this is what he said.
I think it's important that Hollywood not tie itself in knots. One of the worst things that the left has done in America, and it applies times 10 in Hollywood, is that we have tangled ourselves up in regulate. Do you know, for example, Oppenheimer, Saving Private Ryan, Shakespeare in Love, none of those movies could qualify for an Oscar next year. In order to qualify for an Oscar, your two leads, one has to be a person of color, you have to have LGBT representation, you have all of these restrictions that make it impossible.
So he thinks they're going to help to rebuild it, that Gavin Newsom says to take the regulations away. Have you know James Woods? You understand his frustration?
Yeah. Jimmy and I are pals. We worked together back in 1989.
Wow.
He won an Emmy for a role where he played Bill Wilson, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's we became pals way back when. Jimmy is very lucky that his house was not taken. I mean, he thought his house for sure was going to be gone, and then he got back there, and everything around him was gone, and the houses on his side of the street were okay. It's very sad. This $50 million thing. Just imagine what I was frustrated about is, you know, you got the highest state taxes in the country, but, you know, no control over how they spend the money, of course. And then when you hear, you know, highest gas prices, all these things, and there's no water in the hydrants. There's no water in the reservoir. And they're spending money on these other things. It really can be quite frustrating, I think.
It's probably part of the reason you left. They named three ambassadors to Hollywood. Now you have Stallone. It's going to be Mel Gibson. And John Voight. Are you upset you weren't named amongst them?
No. I know John and Mel, I don't know Sylvester Stallone, but if they can make positive changes, there's a lot of restrictions there. I mean, so much production has to go out of state or up to Canada or somewhere else like that because the regulations and the taxes and the expense is much too great in California quite often. So a lot of productions go north or go to some other state. I did a movie years ago that what I heard was the budget would have been twice as much to make it in California it was a movie that was largely made on sound stages.
Wow.
And they had to go up to Canada to you know, where the budget was half as much as it would have been in California. And this was a movie that was largely made on sound stages. You know, why couldn't we make it in California in the stages there? Because the you know, the unions and the taxes and all the things are you know, make things difficult. There's a lot of production in California, don't get me wrong. But, you know, when you're trying to save money and all of that, you have to consider, you know, well, if I could save, you know, millions and millions of dollars by going to Georgia or going up to Canada or something like that, why wouldn't I do that?
I hear.
So maybe the ambassadors here will make some changes and be able to, you know, bring production, you know, a lot of production back to California, which brings a lot of jobs back to California, which would be very, very, very good.
So, meanwhile, Gary, to what you're doing now, you're working with the troops. Do you have another event coming up?
I'm about to go on a concert trip where my band is playing at Camp Hunter Liggett up near, you know, it's up near Monterey in California. And then we go down to San Diego to play at Naval Medical Center there. We do that every year. And then we go to Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico after that. So I'm about to go on a little concert trip. We have a lot going at the Gary Sinise Foundation. And again, as I said, our son Mac was so devoted to the foundation, loved everything the foundation was doing. They loved the mission, loved helping veterans, helping people. And he's mm-hmm. still doing that because, as I said, the proceeds for his record, Resurrection and Revival, the proceeds are going to Gary Sinise Foundation to help us with our mission. So, you know, anybody listening out there, go to GarySiniseFoundation.org and check out the stories that are written about these records. You'll be helping our veterans and certainly honoring our son by giving his music a listen.
Gary, always great to have you on, and we'll go out to his song called "The Veterans" by Mac Sinise. Gary, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Love it, Brian. Thank you. And all that music is on Mac Sinise YouTube, the videos.
Gotcha. Thanks, Gary. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is the most important law enforcement agency in America. On 9/11, and you remember the day well as I do, Wolf. Where did we turn to find out what in the hell just hit the United States on 9/11? Are they coming again? Can we stop them? Let's do it. We went to the FBI, the premier law enforcement agency, and we demand of that agency the very best in terms of men and women who serve there and the resources they're given. And the person who leads that agency has to be a law enforcement professional, someone who understands the responsibility. Mr. Patel is not in that category. He may have other qualifications and talents, but not leading the FBI.
That is Dick Durbin's view, the ranking member on the Judiciary Committee, which will have a vote. But if you just stay with the majority, cash vote, cash Patel gets through. Bottom line is he needs a hearing, and you got to pick up the pace. Guys, you're going way too slow. To only have a Secretary of State 2 days in is not good for the country. Will you stop with the party stuff? You know these guys are getting through. You know they're qualified. Why delay it? It only hurts the country. And you know, there's the same attitude where you just ignore the Supreme Court and talk about how illegitimate it is. That same attitude. And if Republicans do it, and I hope you know that I called it out, if you think these guys are good enough to get through, give them a vote. 99-0, Rubio gets through. So that was quick. That was first. Radcliffe, where's the vote? It should have happened last night. He gets flying through committee. Kristi Noem, it should have happened last night. Next week, we're going to have to wait for an attorney general. It should have happened this week. Why are we giving up on this week? So we have Kash Patel going today. Not today, but he's got a He's got an official date. It's got to be January 29th. His confirmation hearing will be set. That'll be fireworks. Pam Bondi will get her final committee vote next week, so she'll have another step. Rubio got through. Tulsi has not gotten a date yet, but there was one report that her meetings have not been great to be the DNI on, and the questions, her answers to some of the questions about her Syria trip with Assad and some of the statements she made afterwards are not doing so well. However, she did explain it, that she was going to Lebanon with Denis Kucinich, and then they got an opportunity to go see Assad, and she said, all right, I'll go. It was never the original intent. Next, we do understand that Tulsi might have support of Bernie Sanders. Said they had a good meeting. He also knows that when Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders are going head-to-head for the nomination, Tulsi Gabbard had seen enough of Hillary Clinton and her corruption. She went for Bernie Sanders, and he appreciates that. Bernie Sanders is a little like Fetterman in that they just have their certain ideas, and you know, he's really not a member of the Democratic Party, part of the reason. Plus, he's socialist, and he's 80-something. That's one of the reasons he didn't get any support from the party itself, and that's why they panicked and put Joe Biden up there, because it looked like Bernie was going to win, not Elizabeth Warren, not Senator Klobuchar, and not Mayor Pete. So when that became apparent, the one person that stood by him at that time was Tulsi Gabbard. She then won independent, and now she won full MAGA, as they say. If you get through, she's so intelligent, so smart, I'm sure she's going to grow into the position. And as a management position, she'll be able to look at intelligence and say, hey, this is not helping the country. This is political. We're going to knock that off. It's DEI already. Knock that off. If that's still popping up with the intelligence apparatus, they'll all be under her. So I hope she gets through. Then these ambassadors like Huckabee, the Russian ambassador, Tilman Fertitta over in Italy, that's got to get a hearing date because they actually are going to do legislation. What I think is interesting about Marco Rubio, he got a standing ovation as he gets nominated. Then he gets goes through committee. Then he gets the 99-0 vote. Then he walks into the State Department and he gets a standing ovation. He says for his agenda, the Secretary of State will halt aid, foreign aid, at times, and meet with Asian diplomats at other times. He also says that he's all about America first. He's going to make sweeping changes. He made clear in a cable that it went out worldwide. Sweeping changes, America first. One of his first emphasis will be, believe it or not, at the border. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. I come to you from 48th and 6th after two cold days out in Washington, D.C. We'll do a simulcast in 45 minutes with Barney and Company and FBI, one of the fastest growing cable stations in the country. And Amir Vexler is here. He's president and chief executive officer of Centrus Energy. Nuclear energy is going to play a key role. This new secretary of energy, Chris Wright, when he's confirmed, has confirmed that. And so is President Trump. What are the pluses? What are the minuses? And why do we have to go to Russia for uranium? Some of that you're not going to believe. It's going to anger you, but you need to know it. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This can be easy or this can be hard. This is about America's national security interests, and we're stalling. So that's not going to happen. You can force us to staying around here, and we can vote on these things Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we're going to vote on it.
Senator Thune, making it clear, we know what you're doing, Chuck Schumer. Stop slowing down the confirmations of cabinet secretaries that you know are going to be confirmed. Trump gets Rubio through on the nomination gauntlet. We look at the testimony, the committee votes, and the confirmations as Dems try their best to slow down the slowdown antics.
Number two.
ICE teams are out there as of today. We gave them the direction to prioritize public safety threats that we're looking for. So we've been working up the target list.
Tom Homan, massive immigration action going on right now in major cities, including Chicago and at the border. And yes, there is pushback.
Number one.
This means we can create AI and AGI in the United States of America. Wouldn't have been obvious that this was possible. I think if a different president, might not have been possible, but we are thrilled to get to do this, and I think it'll be great for Americans, great for the whole world.
Sam Altman weighing in. He's a part of a $500 billion investment. Trump time in real time, massive executive action, blitzing D.C., and a major announcement in AI, and it's not driven by taxpayer dollars. So let me give you an idea of what took place yesterday. We got the announcement from Catherine Levitt on Fox and Friends in the morning, and she said, major infrastructure announcement you're not probably not going to be expecting at 4 o'clock. I said, okay. It was OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, Oracle Chair Larry Ellison, SoftBank CEO Mariyoshi Sun, who announced Stargate, a $500 billion effort to build new AI data centers after Trump revoked the Biden executive order on addressing AI risks. We all know about the risks. We heard about when Sam Altman did this interview in 2022 about OpenAI and ChatGPT. He said, this is great, this is exciting, and it could be dangerous. So they went out of their way, did Joe Biden, to rein it in. And it's hurt us. China has caught us. President Trump has a different philosophy when it comes to that. So basically, Biden's executive order in 2023 was implemented with changes at the federal agency focusing on preventing risks such as algorithms that spread bias or AI assistance that could help terrorists. That's a worry always. Nuclear weapons, great thing if it's to defend your country. Bad if a terrorist gets it. AI, same thing. China, same thing. They don't have the same concerns. But when you put the brakes on, the bumpers, if it was to do a Boeing analogy, if you do that, just know that China, it doesn't have any regulations to worry about. It's a massive communist dictatorship. They're going to just bull ahead. The hell with caution. And that's what Trump felt. The hell with caution. And I thought that yesterday it was embarrassing. You had a press corps there with three of these titans of technology behind them talking about with AI, focusing on what it could do for in terms of stopping cancer in its tracks by designing a personalized cure through artificial intelligence once they knew your personal information. This just blew me away. But every question was about the pardon of January 6th or something ancillary that they think is the old, that's the old Trump formula for success and big ratings. It's not going to work now. Here's Sam Altman on why he came together with this president when he had not supported him before. Cut four.
This means we can create AI and AGI in the United States of America. Wouldn't have been obvious that this was possible. I think if a different president, it might not have been possible, but we are thrilled to get to do this. And I think it'll be great for Americans, great for the whole world.
No doubt about it. And it could. And they got to build it and they got to keep egos out of it. Elon Musk obviously has got used to be best friends with these guys. He's not now. And he was not there. But no word that he's on the outs with Trump at all. But Elon Musk blows a hole, he says, in Trump's big AI infrastructure announcement. Quote, they don't actually have the money. But he says he has the money. They don't have the money. But what happens is if you have $30 billion, you could take out $100 billion. That's what happens. You get the investment, the backing of the government. They think it's a good investment, and you go. So you never really even have to use your money in many of those cases. But Musk seems a little angry. This is going to be the roller coaster the whole time. What does Musk think? What does Sam Altman think? And what does it mean for the country? But if anyone thinks that Elon Musk is running the White House, you just don't know Trump. That would never have happened. Listen, we come back. I'm going to bring in Amir Vexler. We're going to talk about what else could feed into that grid. Nuclear energy. It burns clean and it's quick and effective. Will we make the commitment? Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If confirmed, will you make it a priority to build and secure our nuclear fuel supply chain?
Senator, absolutely. It is a significant hole in the U.S. arsenal right now, a technology we developed, but yet we import most of it from abroad, and most that's enriched in the U.S. is by companies that are not American companies.
That is Chris Wright. He is a Secretary of Energy nominee who's going to get through, talking about the role of nuclear energy and what it's going to be in the all and above strategy. Amir Vexler is here, President and Chief Executive Officer of Centrus Energy Corp. He also serves on the company's board of directors. Amir, you're pushing for nuclear energy, right? And why do you think that's our answer?
Well, absolutely, we're pushing for nuclear energy. If we as a society want a reliable, affordable power on the grid then we absolutely need to put as much effort nuclear as possible.
What do you have?
We as a company? Well, so it, all nuclear reactors, with a few exceptions, require uranium enrichment in order to be able to run. And we are the company that provides that enrichment services. We are currently competing against mainly state-owned, all foreign-owned companies. And so we really are somewhat of an anomaly. We're the only American technology and the only ones that are sort of publicly traded.
Burns clean, right?
Exactly.
You know, and it becomes affordable, correct?
Correct.
Europe is coming back to it?
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing a lot of signs. There's a lot of countries that have exited it, that are rethinking it. There's some countries that are reversing moratoriums. I mean, there's great examples. I mean, Switzerland, Sweden. I mean, Sweden was decommissioning reactors. They are now back into building. And, I mean, we're even hearing Germany. I mean, the new party that's running is reconsidering.
And they're much smaller now, correct?
There is a choice of having small modular reactors, advanced reactors, but you still can invest and build a large reactor.
So people say some of the downside is security. So it's great for energy. It could also be used as a weapon. So what about the security that comes along with it? Should a town, a city, or country say, I'm going to go for this nuclear thing?
Yeah, I really do not believe that there is a concern around the security of a nuclear reactor, is the way you teed it up. You know, there's regulatory requirements. There is all kinds of internal and external procedures and policies that companies are following. And so nuclear has never really been safer than it is now.
Where do you get uranium from? Where do we get it from?
All right, that's a good question. So there's several stages to making fuel. One is you got to mine the uranium, and the uranium is mined all over the world. I mean, whether it's Kazakhstan, whether it's Canada, some of it is mined in the U.S., but in very small amounts. But really the critical part of it is the enrichment. And the enrichment of the uranium is the restricted part of the nuclear fuel cycle.
Russia's got most of the uranium.
Russia has most of the uranium enrichment. Russia actually, last time I checked, was somewhat of a net importer of uranium. But they had 44% of the world's enrichment capacity.
What do we have in natural resources here for uranium?
That would be a good question for a uranium miner. But we do have American uranium mines that are starting up as as part of all this effort of bringing stuff back into the U.S.
What kind of success have you had with the new administration? Have you spoken to them?
Well, they're very new. We're aiming to speak with them. We have not had any concrete discussions yet.
Would you look to do that?
Absolutely.
So how quickly could you get these nuclear reactors built?
So, again, that would be a question for the nuclear reactor builders. We, from our perspective, Centrus is an enricher. So to us, whether they build small reactors, large reactors, advanced reactors, whether they build them in the U.S. or somewhere else, they will need to enrich them. So we are positioned fairly well.
So when you see what happened in Europe, after what happened in Japan, what did that do to the nuclear industry after their tsunami?
I do believe that a lot of the decisions that were made were heavy on the political side without consideration of what that's actually going to result in. I mean, it resulted in a lot of coal burning. It resulted in a lot of dependency on Russian gas. And so I think a lot of these countries are reconsidering their position now.
What makes you think so?
Yeah, I mean, there's headlines almost every day of countries that are seeking, you know, new nuclear build.
So in the U.S., people listen to this, go, yeah, I know you do the enriching, but it gets me worried. I don't want it in my neighborhood because of what's happened before. And because our first exposure to nuclear technology was a weapon. So what do you say to people who are nervous about it?
Yeah, so enriching uranium does not result in weapons. I mean, the enrichment that we do is at the levels of supplying commercial reactors. Mm-hmm. It's not at the levels of nuclear weapons. And so there are very tight regulatory requirements around this and very tight safety requirements around this. It really is an entirely different world.
Centrus is the only American company with a deployment ready to go?
That is correct. The only American company with American technology that's actually enriching right now.
And how long would it take for, on average, if you commission a nuclear reactor, how long does it usually take to build successfully? A year, 2 years?
So a nuclear reactor, I mean, that could take years, Brian.
Right. So how long would it take for America to, if they decide to embrace nuclear technology for energy, how long would it take to get on that footing?
I mean, I would want to say that you're probably looking at the end of this decade, and this is based on what a lot of the large companies are advertising and some of the small modular reactors are targeting. I mean, they're targeting somewhere around the end of the decade.
The end of the decade. So we could have an immediate impact. So when people are environmentalists, they should be embracing this. You tell why?
Well, I feel like they absolutely should be embracing it, and I feel like they are. The reason is very simple. I mean, this is a clean form of energy, emission-free, 24/7, and affordable. I mean, this is an affordable form of energy that provides you the independence, the energy independence that you need.
So let's talk about the Trump administration. You say they have to have something you got to handle right away. How to allocate $3.4 billion in funding that Congress has already put to jumpstart uranium enrichment. How would you recommend they use that?
Well, so let me just give you a little bit of background of what it is. So for many years, and still somewhat now, we have been dependent on Russian enrichment. So about a third of our all reactors ran on Russian enrichment. And Russia was really banned by Congress starting in 2028 or the end of 2027. And in line with that, they also allocated $3.4 billion to kickstart an American supply of enrichment. And so right now in the runnings for that funding is Centrus along with other companies, but the main competitors are Europeans.
Wow.
So obviously we are the value proposition that we have is our technology could be used for commercial use, could be used for national security use, and we're the only technology that could be used that way, both ways. And not to mention the fact that we're the only ones that have a complete American supply chain. So the Europeans would source their centrifuges, all of their equipment from Europe. It will be exclusively made in Europe.
Where else is, what are they? I know South Africa is rich in uranium, right? What other places are?
So if you look at the largest producers of uranium, Kazakhstan is probably number one.
Kazakhstan? Oh, why aren't they rich? I mean, if they have this.
They are a rich country. I bet the Russians are looking back and thinking, why did we ever let
them They'll probably take them back. Don't give them any ideas.
Yeah. So, I mean, Russia is, I mean, there are extremely rich ores in Canada. And there are some in Australia and Africa.
Right. I heard South Africa. Is that correct?
I'm not sure how big of a producer South Africa is.
So what has China done to secure those mines? Been very aggressive, right?
They have, again, this is in... I'm not a huge expert on this, but I do know that the Chinese have funded, supported, are in great relations with the Kazakhs.
So what would you recommend that we do?
Well, number one, I would pay attention closely to enrichment because we have to have enrichment to run our reactors and we have to have national security. So number one, I would say that the administration has an important decision to make. Is it going to be a European company or is it going to be an American company that's ready to go now? My recommendation is spend tax dollar money on an American company. That is the right thing to do. That is an easy choice, Brian.
All right. So here is Zelensky talking about how he just cut off the energy that Europe was getting from Russia. And he did it a few weeks ago, cut 28.
And we need to make sure no European country is depend on a single energy supply, especially not Russia. Right now, things are on our side. President Trump is going to export more energy. But Europe needs to step up and do more long-term work to secure real energy independence. You can't keep buying gas from Moscow while also expecting security guarantees, help, and backup from the Americans. That's just wrong.
Your thoughts?
I think he's absolutely right. I think you have to diversify. You have to make sure the people you are in business with are people you trust. And I will throw in one interesting point. I just read recently that Ukraine signed a long-term agreement with a European enrichment company. I would welcome countries like that to come and look at what we as American enrichment can do for them as well. I mean, just by way of illustrating some of the points that President Trump was making, if we are in the business of trade, let's do it in a way that it benefits the United States of America. We're able to enrich for our allies. Why can't we do that?
Right, I agree. That would be something special. But I think everyone is forced to look around now for energy. We do have natural gas here, too. But we've been slow on getting that to our allies as well through terminals, which was a decision by the previous administration, which right now we're in a pause. It makes no sense. So what would you do first to get the attention of the Trump White House? Are you waiting for Chris Wright to be confirmed?
I think the critical individuals for us are obviously Chris Wright, the energy secretary, and his staff. I think it would be critical for us to for them just to understand as they get into their jobs, to get the right debriefs and make sure they understand the lay of the land and who the competitors are and what is the overall case for the United States of America.
And with the emergence of AI, could you give everyone an understanding of how much we're going to need in terms of energy increase?
Yeah, that's a good point, Brian. So, I mean, nuclear is not only important just for its virtues, but we're talking about huge demand curve that is increasing. I mean, we all watched Fox News yesterday and everything that is going on with AI and how we can cure cancer. All of that requires incredible amount of energy. And, I mean, nuclear is well positioned to be part of that mix. So we would need to grow that sector.
Absolutely. I hear you. Absolutely. All right. Thanks so much. Amir Vexler, President, Chief Executive Officer of Centrus Energy Group. Thanks so much, Amir. Hopefully America wises up.
Thank you.
All right. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll take your calls next. 1-866-408-7669.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
No, it started. Ice teams are out there as of today. We gave them the direction to prioritize public safety threats that we're looking for. So we've been working up the target list. There was some discussion about Chicago because the Pacific operational plan was released. So we had to look at and reevaluate, does this raise officer safety concerns? And it does. Mm-hmm. But we've addressed that and... teams are all effective today.
And they're moving right now, and the numbers are really low right now at the border. Deportations are taking place in Arizona on President Trump's first full day. That was yesterday. He declared a state of emergency with his actions around immigration, declare a border emergency, build a border wall, it's starting, catch and release gone, reinstitute, remain in Mexico. Even got some Democrats support that. That CBP app where you're sitting in your country, you try to get online, and when you get a notification, you have to get your own money, but then you fly in for free. You fly in and stay for free. Direct U.S. military to the southern border. I believe it's there, or it's arriving now. Classify drug cartels as foreign terrorists, which is huge. Eliminate criminal cartels operating on U.S. soil. That's in the process. That's going to be the focus initially. And that's why so much of people going, oh, I'm worried about the people living next door to me who are here illegally, they're going to be targeted. Eventually, they're going to be contacted. But if you got a court date and don't show up, don't blame Tom Homan that you're nervous. Cut 13.
Birthright citizenship is a major driver of illegal immigration. Mm-hmm. I know from, I've done this over three decades. One of the first things an illegal alien does when they get here is give birth to a citizen child. I think that makes them immune from our laws, right? We can't send that message to the whole world that you can enter our country illegally, which is a crime. You commit another crime, and you can even get removed by an immigration judge after expensive due process. But if you have your citizen child, you're off the hook. We can't send that message. We'll never fix the border.
Yeah, but that's the message you're getting. But so far, what happened is the people have really slowed down coming because of the message was sent during the campaign and who won the vote. Big story today in Punch Bowl saying that they have no idea, Democrats, how to handle this because over 55% of the country want mass deportations. So if you're going to do the AOC thing that everybody here should become citizens and that nobody wants to do these jobs and we should just use our taxpayer money and put them in nice hotels, that is not going to fly with the American public. Might fly in a place in Queens where she's been elected to represent them. Cut 14 is more Tom Homan.
Yeah, the crossings in the northern border, especially in that area where the officer was killed, the crossings are up 600% of special interest aliens. We got a lot of people from India, Pakistan, Turkey, people that can afford to go to Mexico and sneak across the northern border, which is much easier.
So that's the problem. And it was a Border Patrol agent killed yesterday. And that's why the president is bringing up Canada so often. Because what he's saying is, Canada, you're not supposed to be the problem. We can't have any problem there. When we crack down in the south, if they can go through the north and you don't seem to be paying attention, that's going to make just push our problem around, not solve it. Julie, you're listening on News Talk 97.1, where I'm going to be March 22nd with History, Liberty, and Laughs. What's on your mind?
I saw that. I'm hoping to get there if it's not already sold out.
We're getting there already, but it's not sold out yet.
I'm really concerned about... Hello?
Go ahead.
I'm really concerned about H-1B abuse. All of the jobs are published, and there's great research on X. Elon Musk at his Austin Tesla plant, for example, hired an EHS, Environmental Health and Safety Assistant Manager. I work in that field. You cannot tell me that somebody from a different country understands the U.S. laws and regulations that apply that that job demands. I just think it's a way to hire foreign labor at lower wages, forcing downward pressure on wages, and then those visa holders can't go work for anybody else. They're stuck with that employer. Like, that employer is empowered, and I'm just concerned that they are replacing American workers. These are not exceptional jobs. These are rank and file jobs, assistant managers at 7-Elevens, for example. Those are actual H-1B visa positions.
I know, and that's
I'd
what Donald
what
Trump was
about it.
Donald Trump was talking about that yesterday. He says he had maitre d's and sommeliers who look at wine. He says, you know, we got some of the best. We bring them in. Also, when you have the Elon Musk of the world, if they were a senior at Stanford and they're like, listen, I love to stay, but my visa makes me go back, we want them to stay. We should not pretend that everyone's a first-round draft pick. And sometimes you need offensive linemen, and sometimes you need quarterbacks. And when it comes to the Einsteins of the world in our past, Benjamin Franklin, indispensable. When they're coming over, we should have an easier way to keep them. But I do worry about the abuse. I do worry about, hey, instead of hiring an American to be the assistant manager at 7-Eleven, they want to keep wages low and hire somebody on the outside who just wants to be grateful to be here. That's why there's got to be some oversight and some infrastructure to make sure this works. Look, in other parts of the immigration system, they kill you if you want to marry a foreigner. And you, when they become a citizen, the questions that they ask, the scrutiny that they go over, the steps you have to take to become a citizen legitimate, it is hard. It is costly. So you could do the same if you want to do that. And I would like to make it a little bit easier for people who legitimately are in a relationship with an American. I like to make that easier. But there should be H-1N1, there should be H-1 visa qualifications and oversight. Thomas in Avon, Connecticut. Hey, Thomas.
Yes, I called on the nuclear. We've used nuclear power in submarines since 1954, and I should think it'd give some comfort to people to be aware they've not had a nuclear problem with it, and I'm sure they make them better now than they did in 1954.
Yeah, and people's impression is what happened at Three Mile Island years ago. You know, there was great glory on Long Island. There was a Shoreham power plant. And they just, but the minute they commissioned it, there was all these protests for about 15 years until they finally decommissioned it. And now we are paying a ton of our utility costs are through the roof. And Cuomo got rid of a nuclear power plant also in New York. So that really made it go up even further. When there's safety concerns, they do the studies, they understand the responsibility, and there's always risk with everything, like with oil and gas drilling, always risk. But for the most part, it's minimal, and the upside is just great. And that's why I think that when you talk about things that normally would be boring, I'm into the Interior Secretary. I want to find out what is going on in our federal lands. I am into what's happening with energy, because if you have, you can flood the zone with energy, it brings all the prices down, everything from delivering goods to you, traveling. I see nothing but good things. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, though, did respond to Donald Trump's continuing harassing of Canada, saying 51st state, and we're going to hit there with 25% tariffs if you don't control your border and easy with the farm goods. Here's what the prime minister said. Cut 10.
President Trump said that he wants to usher in a golden age for the United States. That will require more steel and aluminum, more critical minerals, more reliable and affordable energy, more of everything to run the U.S. economy full steam ahead. Canada has all those resources, and we stand at the ready to work with the United States to create a booming and secure North American economy. The alternative for them would be more resources from Russia, China, or Venezuela. Canada is a safe, secure, and reliable partner in an uncertain world.
Yep, he just wants to get it all in line. He feels as though there's still some problems, even despite the USMCA. I will say this, it does seem as though some Democrats are buying in to some of the president's push for oil and gas to get those prices down, to get inflation down. And that is this, a couple of Blue Dog Democrats, Congressman Jared Golden and Mary Glusenkamp Perez of Washington. They co-sponsored the GOP bill to reinstate Trump's Remain in Mexico policy. And they're also co-chairs defending the support of the hardline border security bill. They're also in favor. The bill is also led by Brandon Gill, a Republican working with Democrats. Can you believe it? That's 70 GOP co-sponsors. That's what the president's doing. He wants people to look at the election, look at their district, say, how did he win? How did he get the Senate and House? And what can I do while still remaining, I guess, technically a Democrat? So those are the things that are at stake. When we come back, I'm going to go on with Stuart Varney. He announced a purge the president did over 1,000 Biden appointees, just told them that they're fired. If you worked in DEI, they say go home. You get paid leave. We'll figure out what to do with you. I agree. The whole affirmative action DEI has got to go. It's ineffective. It doesn't get you the best people. And the people that get hired are looked at as the only reason they're hired is because they're a DEI hire. You could argue that that's what Kamala Harris was. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, I do a simulcast. And don't forget to see me on stage, History, Liberty, and Last, BrianKilmeade.com. I'll be in Jacksonville in the 15th Florida Theater and at the Factory on March 22nd in St. Louis. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. At the end of the Stuart Varney segment on FBN, we're going to have a chance to take some calls on the back end, 1-866-408-7669. If you want to write me, BrianKilmeade.com. So we'll be able to weigh in on what's happening. We'll talk about the end of DEI, which is pretty amazing. It's easy to say it, and we're watching private industry subscribe to it and get rid of cancel culture, but now we're seeing it throughout the government, the last bastion of where it was flourishing. Last week, before President Trump actually took office, the FBI voluntarily disbanded their DEI office. What about all these other groups that are about to do the same thing? We're about to talk about that. You know, it's about equity, right? And inclusion, correct? Not really. Let's listen in.
Right there, right-hand side of the screen. And 3, 2, 1. Here he is. All right, Brian. Trump began firing more than 1,000 appointees from the Biden administration. He said many more are coming soon. He's clearing house, Brian.
He is. And he's saying, yeah, go home with pay for now. He also just says all these DEI offices, we're collapsing them. Other people is just saying flat out you're fired. And he's also trying to loosen up rules on the ability for managers to fire their civil service employees, because many of which, with their union, feel impervious to all these actions. But I think America, in the private sector, you've been showing in your show, is already saying goodbye to DEI. Disney saying it, Walmart saying it. You see so many other companies just getting rid of it. And then the FBI does it last week on their own, just to say we're getting rid of that. And so we will see. Al Sharpton's not happy about it, which means usually it's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. Brian, listen to Trump take questions yesterday. He went on for a long time. Here's a short clip. Roll it.
Mr. President, is it also true in your conversations with Republicans today that you asked them to consider recess appointments for cabinet officials?
I think, yeah, if it's needed. I don't think it's going to be needed.
Are you open to Elon buying TikTok?
I would be if he wanted to buy it, yeah.
Do you intend to continue selling products that benefit yourself personally while you're president?
Well, I don't know if it benefited. I don't know where it is. Where is it today?
Several billion dollars, it seems like, in the last several days.
Several billion? That's peanuts for these guys.
Were security concerns at all a factor when deciding to move your inauguration indoors?
No, not at all. No, not at all. It was just cold.
Do you have TikTok on your phone?
No, but I think I might put it there.
Yeah, Brian, that's a far cry from the last 4 years when Biden rarely took off-the-cuff questions. It reminds me of the old days. How about you?
Absolutely. And, you know, people are just going to grab that one question. Other networks, they'll go, I'm going to go run with it. But I just found it so insulting. I'm almost embarrassed to have these three titans of the tech industry and AI, the most mysterious but potentially life-changing thing that's happened maybe over the last 50 years. And they're all in the Oval Office talking about a $500 billion investment that's going to benefit multiple states and thousands of people. And it's, hey, what about the January 6th pardons? How come you formed your own cryptocurrency? And I'm seeing you have an opportunity. This Larry Ellison came out and said, in a short while, using this technology, we'll be able to find out the cancer that might be existing in you and stop it before it kills you. That's pretty enticing. I could think of a few questions off the top of my head. And with Larry Ellison there and all the AI leading engineers there, that might come to fray. But instead, you got this ongoing obsession with January 6th. And I love that President Trump at one point was trying to finish a sentence. And yes, the network reporter was pushing back. And he just said, let me finish.
Yeah. You get it wrong. Almost, he almost said, shut up. Almost, but not quite. You're going to get a lot more about this. I mean, whenever he comes out in public, there's a camera, and he addresses the camera and answers any and all questions. It's such a contrast to Biden, who tried desperately to escape the cameras, escape reporters, and his staff kept him away. Stuart, it's a contrast.
Keep in mind, he had that list of people. They gave me a list. I'm going to get myself in trouble, he constantly said. Who's going to get Donald Trump in trouble? And do you think he had a list? He just said, yeah, you, next, go ahead. Just nodded to people. That's not the type of staff that he needs. I mean, he just doesn't need it. But as you saw with Marco Rubio yesterday, he sent a missive out to all the State Department employees. We got a new series of, we have a new focus right now. I think we're going to see the same thing with energy. We're going to see the same thing with interior. We're going to see the same thing with defense. And you're going to see a lot of the same freewheeling pressers with the cabinet secretaries who are going to be empowered to put the mission out there. And, Stuart, I think it's going to help get the pressure off the new president, because he's going to say, yeah, that's what I told defense to do, and the state gets him now. They're not going to be contradicting him. And I think there's a chance to get the pressure off his shoulders and let him start thinking creatively, which he did, obviously, up until this moment when he became president. That's why he's able to hit the ground running, because he's been having a series of meetings that gave them, and brainstorming, what they learned the first time, what Joe Biden's doing this time, and how to fix it now.
This presidency is going well. That's my opinion, but I think a lot of people share it. Brian Kilmeade, see you again soon. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely, still ahead, Barney. And, of course, Sean Hannity's got the first interview tonight that he's going to do a sit-down in the White House. And today we already had leadership go over there yesterday and meet with the president. We saw how angry John Thune was. We also know this. The president was asked about Russia, and he was asked about Vladimir Putin. He's like, you're probably going to meet with Xi. You talked over an hour with President Xi. But when it comes to Vladimir Putin and ending this war, he just ad-libbed the fact that it's not going well for him. And in the past, there was so much conjecture about, is the president compromised by Vladimir Putin? Do they have a secret deal? Did he throw the election? He'd be concerned every time he brought him up that people are going to think that they have some type of an alliance, and he didn't. Now we know that for a fact. Yesterday he said this. We hear statements from members of his team about the desire to restore direct contact with Russia. He said this. Here's what Vladimir Putin said. We also hear this statement and the need to do everything to prevent World War III. We certainly welcome such an approach and congratulate the U.S. president-elect on taking office. However, they have not spoken. He did with President Xi. So we'll see now when he takes office. President said yesterday, our president, that things have not gone well for Russia. Their inflation is very high. Their economy is very weak. They've lost about 700,000 to 800,000 people. So did Ukraine lose a lot of people. There's a lot of death and destruction. He needs to come to the table. So we'll see if he can do it. And we know General Kellogg will be the one engineering it. He's not afraid. He is bold and he's empowered. I think Zelensky wants to talk too. So we'll see if that's front and center while we get off hostages out of Israel. Four more are expected this weekend. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being there, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm here. I'm back in New York. We're not on in a tent overlooking a balcony in 5-degree weather, and we're not listening to people with their ratchets undo their TV sets. So that is a huge improvement, but love being in the action, into the fray with the culmination of the inauguration of President Trump. And what happened after? I never expected this volume of action. Martha McCallum perhaps did. She'll be with us in 20 minutes. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, he is with us in a matter of moments. He was experienced all that action as well. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This can be easy or this can be hard. This is about America's national security interests, and we're stalling. So that's not going to happen. You can force us to staying around here, and we can vote on these things Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we're going to vote on them.
Yes. Why is it that all these guys and these women are through committee, but they can't get a floor vote and get to their offices and start working? Senator Thune, the majority leader in the House, in the Senate, thinks the same thing. Trump gets Rubio through the nomination gauntlet. We look at the testimony yesterday, the committee votes that are coming through, going through the committee, and the confirmation as Dems try their best to slow down everything.
Number two.
All these teams are out there as of today. We gave them the direction to prioritize public safety threats that we're looking for. So we've been working up the target list.
That is Tom Homan, already in action. Massive immigration action underway in major cities and at the border. And yes, they're building the wall. And yes, there is pushback.
Number one.
This means we can create AI and AGI in the United States of America. Wouldn't have been obvious that this was possible, but I think a different president might not have been possible, but we are thrilled to get to do this, and I think it'll be great for Americans, great for the whole world.
That is Sam Altman. Trump time to real time. Massive executive action blitzing D.C. and a major announcement on AI power, and it's not driven by taxpayer dollars. That came through yesterday, although Elon Musk kind of threw a monkey wrench into it and saying these guys don't have $500 billion. That's what they pledged to do to put into their major power system. Rich Lowry joins us now, editor of the National Review. Hey, Rich.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. I think Elon Musk has gotten on the same page. I mean, bottom line is when you have that, when you have billions, you could always take out other billions as investment. Banks want to lend to you.
Yeah, no doubt. It's one of the ironies that you need money to get people to lend you money. But that's why I don't take out huge loans. But that's how the world works.
Right. But what about Elon Musk coming out and trying to upend the president's speech? It looks like him and Altman are in a death match, former friends. Maybe he's a little jealous?
Could be. You know, it's a little bit I wonder about how the Elon Trump thing is going to work out at the end. Because obviously it's been a great and dynamic duo, and Elon, I mean, it was just a cultural inflection point when he acquired Twitter, and it mattered a lot that he backed the president 110% financially every other way. But oftentimes kind of these big personalities around Trump, he gets a little tired of him after a while. So I just wonder how long this one's going to last.
Right, we'll see. There's very few people like him, the richest man in the world, who really was alienated by the left, who has done so much so often. So to me, they already got rid of Vivek Ramaswamy. Clearly, there was some clashes there on the whole Doge situation. Now you have four Democrats joined Doge as an advisor. Why do you think that is?
I think why are Democrats joining?
Yeah.
I think, you know, the idea that we should make government more efficient shouldn't necessarily be a partisan one, right? And it's just kind of a cool thing. So I think they want to be associated with it. And you've seen some of this, you know, in the Lake and Riley bill. You get Senate Democrats voting for it. And so I think there's a chance on some of this stuff. You know, you're not going to get most Democrats, but you could get a few cats and dogs depending on what the issue is. And again, that's just another sign that this is different the second time around. Hasn't been the kind of resistance there was from the left the first time around, and the Democrats are more subdued rather than freaked out.
So what I think is so interesting yesterday is that I wasn't really aware or cognizant or didn't take note of the fact that Joe Biden put the brakes on AI. He had an executive order. An executive order to just basically slow it down. His executive order would have implemented changes at the federal agency focused on preventing risks such as algorithms that spread bias or AI assistance that could help terrorist bill bioweapons. They say with some of these general parameters and guidelines, they were not making any progress. And Trump comes in and says, you got to be responsible, but I'll let you go. And they said, OK, we need more power and we're willing to pay for it ourselves. And they're going to invest $500 billion into doing it. It begins in Texas. They'll have thousands of jobs and then it'll be off to the races with China.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the right attitude, right? Go, go, go. Go do it, right? We're Americans. We can win. We can be the best. And whereas the other side has been concerned that AI will be biased, you know, won't be as concerned with social justice as it should be. And I wrote a column a week ago about some of the DEI policies at the Los Angeles Fire Department. So I was just Googling around female firefighters, you know, the physical difference with male firefighters and whatnot. And it was impossible to find the information. And the Google-generated AI, the chat thing, kept on coming up like, this is bad. Why are you searching this? Why are you thinking this way? These are harmful stereotypes. That's what they want the future of AI to be.
All right. I want you to hear. So with the president having this Titanic announcement, all the others getting rid of DEI, actually unleashing AI as well as cryptocurrency. You know what he's doing at the border, all his immigration policies. And then Marco Rubio gets through. He's now the Secretary of State, gets a standing ovation when he goes to the State Department. He quickly sends a missive out to every facility around the country to say, this is your new mission. No more of this woke culture stuff. It's done. So he goes on Good Morning America. I don't know why, to George Stephanopoulos, who is just deranged when it comes to Trump. Listen to this. Cut 35.
January 6th pardons. Back in when this happened, you called it a national embarrassment, saying we now have third world countries that are lecturing us and we have tin pot dictators that are mocking us. Of course, you're now America's top diplomat. You'll be speaking with your counterparts around the world. What message does that pardon send to them?
Well, I don't anticipate a single one of our partners will ask about it, obviously, and you know this well from your time in the administration. And my job is to focus on the foreign policy of the United States. I have a different job this morning and a different focus, and it's one that demands 100% of our attention. And so that's what I'll be focused on and won't be opining on domestic matters at this point because, frankly, my focus needs to be 100% on how I interact with our, you know, counterparts, our adversaries, our potential enemies around the world to keep this country safe, to make it prosperous. That's the clear mandate from the president. It's what he campaigned on. I think he made it pretty clear yesterday that he wants to reinvigorate an American foreign policy that makes America safer and stronger and more prosperous. That's what the promise that Donald Trump was elected to keep, and that's the one we're going to help him keep at the Department of State.
But as a senator, you did say that it affected our standing in the world. You don't believe that anymore?
Well, as a senator, I had an opinion on all kinds of domestic matters, but now I'm focused singularly on foreign policy, on how I interact with our allies.
Do you see what they're doing? They still want to talk about January 6th. That is it. You have the Secretary of State there. You don't think you could find anything to talk about around the globe? Stephanopoulos is absolutely deranged.
Yeah, well, you're right. The bad choice was to go on that show.
Why would he do it?
In the first place. Yeah, you know, it's just a reflex still among a lot of Republicans just to take these shows seriously because they've been around forever and you know, have a legacy reputation. But look, I would have on the pardons, I would have preferred a case by case approach. They apparently got into it and they thought it was going to be such a morass, take so long, and actually, you know, drag this out and make it more politically harmful. Just do them all at once. So I think people are getting pardoned that shouldn't be, but I think it was part of such a hectic first 24 hours that I think it's going to get lost and be in the rearview mirror very quickly. And their view politically that this was kind of litigated in the election and people are going to move on is probably correct.
So you heard John Thune in our open. He basically said, you guys are slowing down. I know exactly what you're doing. We'll work weekends until we get these people through. There's no reason why there couldn't be a vote for Pam Bondi right away. John Radcliffe is being held up for absolutely no reason. Both are through committee. Elise Stefanik testified brilliantly yesterday, and Kristi Noem 13-2. Why can they not just let these people do their jobs? How is it not anti-American to stop them from getting a job for a week or two that keeps America safe?
Yeah, well, I have to say, this is what the opposition always does, whether it's Republican or Democrat. You delay.
And Obama had eight already.
Yeah, but Republicans tried to delay, and you hope the delay means they lose some momentum, and then they lose some momentum, and then something happens, you know, domestically or in the world that's not great, and there's a crisis they have to deal with, and then before you know it, the honeymoon is gone. So that's their play, and Republicans just need to be united and determined and trying to act as rapidly as possible.
So who do you think is going to have trouble here on in?
I don't have great insights on this besides, you know, Tulsi and Bobby Kennedy. I think both are getting through. I think if there was a secret vote on both of them, they'd probably lose. But I don't think any Republican wants to be the fourth one to stick up their head and say, yeah, you know what, I'm against this nominee who Donald Trump really likes and really wants. You know, I don't think that was true prior to the inauguration. It's certainly not true now with this massive show of force we've seen from the president the last couple of days.
I mean, as much as I don't want to hear it, I want to share with the audience this embarrassment of a reverend, a bishop at the National Cathedral, who obviously feels very personal about gay rights and same-sex marriage and whatever, knows the president will go with tradition, his whole family's going to go to this mass, says, has this theme, cut 23.
Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put their trust in you. And as you told the nation yesterday, you have felt the providential hand of a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families, some who fear for their lives.
So do you feel like a better person? Having been lectured to by some woman who has no clue what it's like to have a responsibility?
I got to tell you, Brian, it's a little bit like going on Good Morning America, like getting a sermon from an Episcopalian bishop. This is probably what you're signing up for. It was terrible. It's so annoying. Every time I listen to it, I get more irritated. And the thing is, she has no idea that actually there's another side of the issue on the trans thing, and maybe it's not merciful to pretend that there's more than one gender. It's not merciful to treat gender dysphoria with radical invasive surgery, and that's not the loving and merciful way to go. It doesn't even occur to her. She's in this information bubble and then is speaking condescending to the President of the United States when she has this opportunity, which is supposed to be a nice unifying event, and she used it as a woke bully pulpit.
And you, on Truth Social, he put out, and essentially he got to the fact that he wants an apology. He wants an apology. He should stop going. There's plenty of other church. If you really want to go, I guess he's non-denominational. I'm not an expert in that area. There are other churches there. So let him deal with not...
Go to a Baptist church, you know.
Go
to an AME church. You know, you're not going to get any of that crap at an AME church. So, yeah, I'm totally with you. Totally
so usually, as usual, Trump made himself available to shouted questions. Cut 29.
You've called for a ceasefire in Ukraine. If Vladimir Putin doesn't come to the table to negotiate with you...
I apologize. 26.
What did you think of the service?
What did you think? Did you like it? Did you find it exciting? Not too exciting, was it? I didn't think it was a good service, no. Thank you very much.
Thank you, press. Thank you, press.
They can do much better.
But his whole family's there, and you see the look on J.D. Vance's face.
Yeah, he was raising his eyebrows. Just, it's been so entertaining the last 2 days. One of my favorite moments was Peter Ducey, you know, asking, did you get the letter? He's like, where's the letter? They usually leave a letter. Is this a drawer here? Peter, oh, here it is. Peter, thanks for mentioning it. It would have been here for years if you hadn't brought it up. It's just so good.
It's a reality show, isn't it?
It totally is, and I mean, this has been part of the political phenomenon from the beginning. It's entertaining. You know, that's not the most important quality in a president of the United States, but it's a very important quality in a presidential candidate, and just lets him dominate the attention space in a way his predecessor just couldn't as he was shuffling off the stage.
Lastly, I just want you to hear the soundbite I began to play. Donald Trump getting questions about Ukraine and Russia. Cut 29.
You've called for a ceasefire in Ukraine. If Vladimir Putin doesn't come to the table to negotiate with you, will you put additional sanctions on Russia?
Sounds likely.
And
yeah.
Do you think that the war should be frozen currently along
the war should have never started. If you had a competent president, which you didn't, the war wouldn't have happened.
The war in Ukraine would have never happened if I were president, but that couldn't happen because the election was rigged.
And he had let him have it. Then he went on to say that they've lost 800,000 people. They're not doing well. Their economy's terrible. He needs to stop this. And Zelensky's lost a lot of people, too. And that really resonated in Russia. It was one of the strongest things he said about Vladimir Putin, who has not called him mysteriously since he got the job. But President Xi has spoke to it over an hour.
Yeah, well, this is if you're Putin, this is the risk. So you got a guy who's willing to talk to you in Trump, who wants the war to end in Trump, and is willing to cut you a reasonable deal in Trump. But if you're the stubborn one, if you're the one who is clearly, I mean, I think he's been in the wrong all along, but if you're the one who's rejecting some sort of negotiation, some sort of reasonable deal, Trump is not going to bow to you. Trump's not going to cave to you. So that's the risk for him. So there's an opening for him to have, you know, hold this territory that he took through illegitimate means. But if he doesn't take it, I think Trump will end up backing Ukraine to the hilt.
I hope so. I'm one of those guys that thinks Zelensky is a great leader and Ukraine has fought with great valor. And if they were backed up the way they should have early, they might have even been better than they are right now. But they should draft 18-year-olds. That's the key. You can't have you can't draft people at 26 and have the average age be 42.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it?
It's weird. I guess it's a political thing. Rich Lowry, thanks so much. We'll make sure to pick up National Review.
Thanks, Brian. Did you enjoy the inauguration, being down there?
I thought it was great. I really did. And the only problem was, and I understand it, you couldn't get anywhere because of the security.
Yeah. Did you go to a ball?
I went to a Liberty Ball, and I also went to a ball the night before.
How is the coat check situation? This is one reason I've given up on inaugurations, because the coat checks are always so bad.
So interesting. I first time I didn't wear a coat because I got close enough.
You're a real man.
Yes. And the next one I did, but you know what I did? On the advice of the person, I took the picture of the door it was in and of the actual sticker, of the actual ticket. So it was really tough for people to get confused, including me.
There
so
you go.
I got
awesome.
It back. Right. Thanks so much, Rich. Good questions. Back okay. in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back, and Martha McCallum is with us. Hey, Martha.
Hi, Brian.
We just got a couple of minutes here. Before we have a couple of seconds, but who's on your show?
So we're going to speak to Caroline Leavitt about the pace of the first 100 days and Senator Mark Wayne Mullen about what's going on in terms of pushback that's starting to happen from Democrats. I sat with Majority Leader Thune in his new office on Friday, and he was determined to push these nominees through quickly. So we're going to get an update on that.
He's a little frustrated right now. More on that, but that's
yes.
Martha at 3 o'clock today. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back with your calls in just a moment. Don't move.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
14-3 coming out of the committee. We've now wasted a whole day where we could have been acting on that nomination. And so really, I think the question before the House is, do we want to vote on these folks on Tuesday or vote on them on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? Because that's what we're going to do. This can be easy or this can be hard. This is a nominee that came out of the Intelligence Committee 14-3. It is a bipartisan nomination to the Central Intelligence Agency. This is about America's national security interests, and we're stalling. So that's not going to happen. We're going to file cloture on them. You can force us to staying around here, and we can vote on these things Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we're going to vote on them.
And what he's talking about is John Ratcliffe, and what you also have is Kristi Noem, 13-2. You have Pete Hegseth got out of committee, too. And you have just Marco Rubio is confirmed. You have Elise Stefanik, who looked great yesterday. So no one thinks that she's not going to get through as UN Secretary Martha McCallum. You hear the frustration in a very mild-mannered voice in John Thune, but he's going to be aggressive. And he's going to, he's, guys, you want to give up your weekend? We'll do that.
Yeah, and he spoke with the president yesterday as well, with Mike Johnson, and no doubt that was the message there as well. No patience, push these through. It is extraordinarily rare to reject a president's cabinet pick, especially when you have the majority in the House and the Senate. So it is, I think it's a mistake for Democrats to waste time on this. As Senator Thune said, you know, you can pass him tomorrow or you can pass him like, you know, several days from now. I hope that he stands by this threat, I guess you would call it, to actually work on a weekend, which most of us consider part of working now and then. But they should really stick to that. I hope that Thune continues to be aggressive. I asked him last Friday, you know, what do you think about the fact that if this agenda doesn't get through the House and the Senate, there'll be outrage by people who voted for this president and his agenda? Outrage. It's like, we feel it. And he said it's a different party now than the party that he has been a part of for a long time. And he recognizes that and wants action.
Right. He does. And some senators on the Democratic side, you would think it would behoove them to do what Fetterman's doing, be somewhat open and pick your spots to take on Trump. And as Fetterman said, don't overreact to everything he does. Now, yesterday, there were dozens and dozens of executive orders and actions that came down. And I can't believe that there's stuff coming down today. The president's already, he's going to meet this afternoon with three leaders that that won their district, who won in Harris districts. So they're going to be tougher votes in moderate sections. So he's trying to meet with as many people as possible, but got to get everybody going in the same direction. Because in the House, we've never had a margin this small. Johnson's got a lot of pressure on him, doesn't he?
Yeah. You can see it, can't you? I think that he is working very hard, and he feels the pressure of his very slim majority. And also the president's, you know, I said to him, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, you know, how often do you talk to the president? He said, really often. And that means that the president is calling him a lot and saying, you know, we can't have the House stand in the way. This is a moment that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. I mean, we got the Lincoln, you got the Lincoln Riley thing. That's pretty cool.
I think that I feel like we need to focus on that, because there were 10 Democrat senators in states that Trump won who backed that. And to me, it's a sign that there is openness, and people forget, like, oh, well, what does it mean, the Lake and Riley Act? It just means that, you know, people can be removed at a much lower bar for breaking the law. I mean, honestly, it's like, if you're in this country illegally anyway, you are on a very short string. If you steal gum from a bodega and you've, you know, you're shoplifting in this country, then you've broken, you know, any agreement with letting you stay here, in my mind. And I think that, you know, we have to start cracking down. Anyone who's here illegally is on a very short string right now.
Here's this, the Reverend yesterday, Reverend Marianne Edgar Budd, with a message to President Trump. Cut 24.
And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in poultry farms and meat packing plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shifts in hospitals, they may not be citizens or have the proper documentation, but the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. They pay taxes and are good neighbors.
All right. Can you believe the audacity of this bishop being able to try to lecture President Trump on immigration?
I have a huge problem with what happened in the National Cathedral yesterday. You know, it's not about her. She made it about her. This is about an inauguration of a new president of the United States. You know, you can go in, I mean, we can easily go, and I heard you guys talk about this earlier. I mean, where is her compassion? Where is her mercy for Lake and Riley's family, for instance, right? Where is her understanding for, you know, the girl who got, you know, hit so hard playing volleyball that she passed out by, you know, a biological male player? So, but what bothers me, honestly, is like any pontificating, any politicalization of the pulpit to me is so wrong. And as a Catholic, this is not something that flies in the Catholic Church. A priest is a conduit to the Word of God, reading the readings, reading the gospel, and interpreting the gospel. It's not about you. It's not about you as some sort of superstar of your church or people cheering you on. It is not about you. It is about the message of God and recognizing the moment in that church. And so I was really, really disturbed by what happened in there.
His whole family's there, too. And you see the vice president just looking at his wife, like, can you believe this is happening? And it's embarrassing. You can see Tiffany right behind over his left shoulder. She's getting upset. And then you have kids. So you say to yourself, normally I could storm out, but that would be a huge scene, make her more famous. She was doing CNN last night. That's what she wants. She was interviewed on the street from in 2020 at the George Floyd riot.
And she's making condemning it about Trump. Her. And she said in the last term, I don't have anything left to say to this president. So she maybe should have let someone else speak yesterday. But no, she did have something left to say. And again, she's making it about her when it should be a national moment. I'm honestly not sure. I mean, why we have a national cathedral. I love the idea of a prayer service that follows the inaugural. But I'm thinking now, after watching what happened yesterday, that each president should choose, you know, where they want that to be. I don't know. I think it really raises a lot of questions about whether or not it should be there.
He's demanding an apology. He's probably not going to get it. Is a bishop in charge of a non-denominational church? And do they have their version of a pope to supersede, to exceed her? Because if she's in charge, she's not going to condemn herself.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I think she answers to someone in her church, but... You know, I know a non-denominational church is not an excuse to pontificate and to make it about you and what you think in that moment. This is, you know, a national moment to embrace and to pray and to ask for God's guidance over this new president. That's all it is.
Even the statement she says, trans kids. Just learn your basics. You shouldn't be examining your gender in grammar school and junior high school. And who is she talking to? And looking at her, you know exactly where she stands on a myriad of issues. So we'll see. The backlash, I think, should be intense. And I think he should make a statement saying, I'm not going back. I will not be going back there. We're going to find somewhere else to go.
I don't know who was aware in this incoming administration who was going to be speaking. But I would imagine that President Trump may be looking at folks and saying, how did we let that happen? How did we walk into that hornet's nest? And knowing what this minister has said in the past about him, you know, as I said, she made it about him versus her. And that's just it's not important for a national prayer service as the country begins a new term. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican or what you are. You should not be in that situation.
All right. Before we take a break, Donald Trump coming out and being somewhat judgmental on Vladimir Putin in his casual conversation for over an hour with various reporters, said this, cut 29.
You've called for a ceasefire in Ukraine. If Vladimir Putin doesn't come to the table to negotiate with you, will you put additional sanctions on Russia?
Sounds likely.
And
yeah.
Do you think that the war should be frozen currently along
the war should have never started. If you had a competent president, which you didn't, the war wouldn't have happened. The war in Ukraine would have never happened if I were president. But that couldn't happen because the election was rigged.
He's not holding back. Obviously, he doesn't worry about that now. The court cases are done. So, he went on to say that Vladimir Putin's really got no choice. He says his economy's terrible. He's lost 700,000 people. It has not gone well for him. It's made him weaker. He should come to the table. And he's going to reconsider what he's doing with Ukraine then. So that's what's a little bit of the conversation I imagine is going to come up at the White House with various people, because you can't let Russia win. And every time Russia and China get together, they reaffirm their fantastic close relationship.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think Russia needs China a lot more than China needs Russia. And I don't know if China will really come to their aid if Russia is pushed to enter into an agreement that they don't want to enter into. And I think it is true that when President Biden said that a minor incursion would, you know, be another thing, that would be something he'd have to look at. That was the beginning of all of this. And when you saw all of those Russian forces lined up around the borders of Ukraine and he said, well, you know, a minor incursion, I think that was a go signal. So I think there's a reset now. And you know, there needs to be an end to the war. You have hundreds of thousands of people who've been killed in this war. But coming out with a satisfactory out for Ukraine, I think, is a huge question mark.
I hear you, because if it does stop, Russia got land and Russia reloads.
That's right.
And then what stops them from reloading and going back in with a different president, or we're looking a different direction? But I mean, when they're honest and the door closes, what a humiliating experience this has been for them.
Absolutely.
I mean, they also, what's underreported, the brain drain. So many people of fighting age have just left. They are out. I mean, they're trying to hunt them down and kill them, which Russia does great. Also, you also see that they used to have a decent relationship with Israel, and they could play somewhat of a role. That's all been out and exposed. And today I read that it looks like this new Syrian government is kicking them out of those military bases. That is a huge loss and huge gain for us, because that's where the Iranians were bringing their drones through, yep, to the port, and then out. They lose that port. That's significant. Iran forced out of Syria, too. Don't love the new Syrian government. Look at the resume. You don't like it. But I love the fact that Russia and Iran are now out.
Well, I think the United States government MO on Iran for decades. I remember in the Bush administration, Condi Rice talking about isolating Iran to the greatest degree possible. They have never been more isolated in our history than they are right now. And that's just another sign of it, what's happening in Syria. And you're right. I mean, even if you're not too confident in this leadership in Syria, the fact that they are loosening their ties with Iran helps the entire region. Iran is in a very, very vulnerable spot right now. And I don't think that, you know, Russia is, I don't think they get much out of propping them up at this point.
Right. Although they love the drones.
They do like their drones.
They do.
Absolutely.
Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need to know basis, because man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
January 6th pardons. Back in when this happened, you called it a national embarrassment, saying we now have third world countries that are lecturing us and we have tin pot dictators that are mocking us. Of course, you're now America's top diplomat. You'll be speaking with your counterparts around the world. What message does that pardon send to them?
Well, I don't anticipate a single one of our partners will ask about it, obviously, and you know this well from your time in the administration. And my job is to focus on the foreign policy of the United States. I have a different job this morning and a different focus, and it's one that demands 100% of our attention. And so that's what I'll be focused on, and won't be opining on domestic matters at this point, because, frankly, my focus needs to be 100% on how I interact with our, you know, counterparts, our adversaries, our potential enemies around the world to keep this country safe, to make it prosperous. That's the clear mandate from the president. It's what he campaigned on. I think he made it pretty clear yesterday that he wants to reinvigorate an American foreign policy that makes America safer and stronger and more prosperous. That's what the promise that Donald Trump was elected to keep, and that's the one we're going to help him keep at the Department of State.
But as a senator, you did say that it affected our standing in the world. You don't believe that anymore?
Well, as a senator, I had an opinion on all kinds of domestic matters, but now I'm focused singularly on foreign policy, on how I interact with our allies.
So Stephanopoulos, who's deranged with January 6th, literally that's the only question he ever asked, and he got himself in trouble. His hatred of Donald Trump cost his company millions of dollars. But you get Marco Rubio on, and that's all you want to talk about. Martha McCallum, I'm just stunned by this. Well, number one, why would Secretary of State Marco Rubio give Good Morning America his first interview? You have to know exactly where it's going.
I agree. I think there is an effort on the part of the administration to get their message out everywhere. And but you're 100% right. That's the buzzsaw that you walk into. The focus is all January 6th all the time. And I think that the signal, as controversial as these pardons are from President Trump, the across the board nature of them, I think, is what's controversial, not, the hundreds of people who were trespassing and who have had their lives, you know, changed ever since that day. But I think that if I had to interpret the action, I would say it's an action that is hopeful by the president in terms of moving on. And I see it almost as a Watergate analogy when Ford pardoned Nixon to say, and not that Nixon and Trump are analogous, the stories are very different, but in terms of the impact on the country and the effort to move on and go past it, I think that's what happened with these pardons. And I think it's the new president's hope that the country can move on. I think the country has moved on electorally.
Absolutely.
As he said, you know, I don't think any foreign leaders are going to ask me about January 6th. We traveled across the country during the election. It was not on people's minds at all. They were much more concerned about inflation and the border and the things that actually affect their lives. So I think in the end, it may, in reflection, be a move that is positive for the country to pardon and move on.
He says, Martha, the first specific agenda item I have, stop illegal immigration and secure the U.S. border, which means he's going to focus in Central and South America. He said, the most consequential issue of our time. That's it. The department will no longer undertake any activities that facilitate or encourage any type of cultural events. Far too much of America's diplomacy is focused on pushing political and cultural causes that are divisive at home and deeply unpopular abroad. So no more supporting gay and lesbian parades in El Salvador.
Yeah. I mean, the money that has gone to those things is a travesty. The American taxpayer works very hard and pays taxes. This is not where they want their money to go. I think that we're returning to a time when each person's role is a defined mission. And I think that Marco Rubio stated his defined mission quite clearly, mm-hmm. to work with the president and the Department of Defense as the diplomatic, the head of our diplomacy, to improve our status in the world. Mm-hmm. Safety, national security, number one.
And by the way, got a big ovation at the State Department when
he
walked in.
Yeah, that was lovely.
Yeah, I think they really would like that leadership and somebody who's very tight with the president, which he is. Martha McCallum, we'll see you at 3 o'clock today.
Thank you, Brian.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Monsters or Misunderstood.
We have evolved to understanding that this kind of stuff can happen.
Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down the Menendez Brothers' new fight for freedom, and their defense attorney explains why he's optimistic he can clear their names.
Are these convicted killers monsters or just misunderstood?
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.